Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. As this new year begins, we'll look into Wednesday's editorials in the New York Times and the UK Guardian calling on President Obama to find a way to bring the NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden in from the cold. One of the leading investigative journalists specializing in national security issues, who has published two bestsellers about the NSA, The Puzzle Palace and The Shadow Factory, Inside the Ultra-Secret NSA from 9/11 to Spying on America, James Bamford, joins us to discuss the possibility of amnesty for Edward Snowden. Then we'll be joined by the former U.S. ambassador to Turkey, James Jeffrey, who has an article in the Wall Street Journal with Sona Çaptay, the Islamist feud behind Turkey's turmoil. We'll discuss the bitter estrangement between Turkey's Prime Minister Erdogan and his former spiritual muse, Fethullah Gulen, which has led to a political scandal that threatens Erdogan's political future and has shaken the very foundation of his Justice and Development Party, the AKP. Then finally, we'll get an update on the bombings in the south of Russia, 400 miles from the site of the upcoming Winter Olympics, that has prompted Russian President Putin to vow that he will fiercely and consistently continue the fight against terrorists until their complete annihilation. A leading expert on Russia's internal threats, Gordon Hahn, the author of Russia's Islamic Threat, joins us to discuss whether possible terrorist threats to the Sochi Olympic Games can be eliminated by Putin's use of brute force, which so far has not entirely worked. Joining us now is James Bamford, an investigative journalist specializing in national security issues. He was the Washington investigative reporter for ABC's World News Tonight and is the author of the best-selling books Body of Secrets, The Puzzle Palace, A Pretext for War, and 9/11 Iraq and the Abuse of America's Intelligence Agencies, and The Shadow Factory, Inside the Ultra-Secret NSA from 9/11 to Spying on America. Welcome to Background Briefing, James Bamford.
Well, thanks very much, Ian.
And what did you make of the editorials that came out in Wednesday's New York Times and the UK Guardian, both of which urged President Obama to, in effect, bring Edward Snowden back in from the cold?
Well, I was all in favor of it. I thought they were very well written, and I thought very well thought out, because this is not a case of espionage. This is a case of whistleblowing. There's no indication that there was anything here other than Snowden wanting to release information to the American public so they knew what the U.S. government was doing behind their back, which was potentially a violation of U.S. laws. And that's been confirmed by both a federal judge and the White House panel that was set up to look into it, that came back with over 40 recommendations for changing these policies. So had Snowden not taken the risk and basically given up his country, these activities, which are potentially illegal or unconstitutional, would still be going on. They are still going on, but at least now there's a degree of debate on the issues in society.
But in terms of the way that the debate has broken down in this country, it's one on the left, I suppose, loosely speaking, although there are a lot of conservatives. In fact, Larry Klayman's the guy that brought the case that the federal judge ruled against the NSA, and he's very conservative.
And actually, that federal judge, Judge Richard Leon, who grew up in the same town that I grew up in, we graduated from law school 1 year apart, the same law school. It's interesting. He's been, I've never agreed with him on an issue in 30 years because he's always been on the far conservative side of every issue. And so you have the plaintiff being fairly a conservative plaintiff, and then you have a very conservative judge. So this is not really ideological in terms of the breakdown of who thinks this is legal and who thinks this is not legal.
Well, but I was going to suggest that, you know, people in this country either think of Edward Snowden as a hero or a traitor. And I suppose perhaps some think of him as both. So in terms of what the hawks are saying, and you've got the former head of the CIA saying he should be strung up by the neck, you've got John Bolton saying something similar. Is there any evidence?
Michael Hayden saying that he should be tried as a traitor.
That's right, right. So we've heard plenty of that. Is there any evidence, and you recently met in Rio with Rio de Janeiro with Glenn Greenwald, is there any evidence that the Russians or the Chinese have any of this, these 1.7 million highly classified documents apparently that Snowden has with him or did have with him? So can you give us an update on where these documents are and who has access to them?
Well, as far as I know, the only two people who have full access to the entire archive of the documents is Glenn Greenwald in Rio and Laura Poitras in Berlin. I was in Berlin a few months ago also and was with Laura Poitras. And I didn't get the impression that there were 1.7 million documents. I didn't know, I didn't have a really good feeling of how many there were, but it was more in the nature of a few hundred thousand than not 1.7 million, but I have no idea exactly how many there are. There's been a lot of speculation in terms of whether Snowden has a doomsday plan where he has maybe the remainder of those documents or other documents in some a digital cloud someplace where he has a key or some other people have keys around the world that if he's captured or arrested, that that's the threat that they will release the archive of documents in where whatever cloud it happens to be. I mean, I have no idea of that whatsoever. I haven't met Snowden. I've never talked to Snowden, and I didn't get any information on those lines from either Laura Poitras or Glenn Greenwald.
Well, that's at the heart, I guess, of whether or not that there is a case that the president has in not offering amnesty, right? I mean, presumably he's been really tough on whistleblowers and been pretty hard-nosed about leaks. So if you've got people like the New York Times and the Guardian and even NSA official who's sort of doing the damage control said on 60 Minutes, CBS's 60 Minutes, that he thinks that maybe there should be some kind of amnesty offer. This is a guy called Rick Ledgett, who I understand may well be taken over after the current head of the NSA leaves. He said on CBS 60 Minutes that he'd consider...
Well, he'd be taken over as deputy director, not director, though.
Yeah, okay. But still, I mean, he's a senior official in the NSA.
Yes, uh-huh.
And he's saying that Snowden... that maybe they should consider amnesty to Snowden if he'd stop any additional leaks. So I'm trying to get to the heart of this thing is, does the government have a case here that there is espionage involved, or is, you know, is this really a case of an absolutely unassailable whistleblower and therefore they should offer amnesty?
Well, I don't think there's been a case of overt espionage. There could be an argument made that possibly that either the Russians or the Chinese or both were able to get access to the documents at some point in his transit through those countries. But my understanding was is that he turned over the access. He didn't carry any of those documents in digital form into either of those countries, that he had passed the access to them onto both Poitras and Greenwald while he was in Hong Kong, before he left Hong Kong. And so when he arrived in Moscow, his computers and electronic media didn't have any of that on it. I mean, you know, you're asking questions about whether the Russians or the Chinese or somebody else may have gotten access incidentally to the material, which I absolutely have no knowledge about whatsoever. There is a precedent, though, in terms of the issue of amnesty for Snowden. I mean, not a direct precedent, but a fairly close precedent. And that took place in England about a decade ago during the war in Iraq, or the lead-up to the war in Iraq, basically. there was a woman that worked for GCHQ, the British equivalent of NSA, named Catherine Gunn.
Sure, I've spoken with her, yeah.
Yeah, and she was very angry that the NSA was trying to, in essence, intimidate or extort boats from small countries, third world countries around the world, to get extra votes for their war in Iraq, and that made her very angry. So she leaked a copy of the top secret NSA document to may have been The Guardian, one of the British newspapers, or The Observer, one of the two, I think. And it got published in the paper and then picked up in the New York Times and other places. And so they brought a case against her. The British government charged her with espionage. And it came to right before the trial. And then just before the trial was to begin, like a day before, I think, they dropped the entire case. And that was largely based on the public opinion being in her favor. So you might have the same situation here where, you know, it's just a decision to decline to prosecute as opposed to granting amnesty or whatever, just a decision not to prosecute.
Again, I'm speaking with James Bamford, an investigative journalist specializing in national security issues. He was a Washington investigative reporter for ABC's World News Tonight and is the author of a number of bestsellers, including Body of Secrets, The Puzzle Palace, A Pretext for War, 9/11 Iraq and the Abuse of America's Intelligence Agencies, and The Shadow Factory, Inside the Ultra-Secret NSA from 9/11 to Spying on America. So given that precedent with Catherine Gunn, who's putting forth these arguments then to the White House, apart from the New York Times and The Guardian? And I mean, it's, you know, one assumes that editorial writers, maybe they think they're changing the world, but my suspicion is that they're not.
Well, I'm sorry, what was the actual question there?
What I was suggesting was that people, you know, maybe the New York Times editorial writers are hoping that the president takes them seriously, but I'm not sure that he is, and I'm wondering what could make him take them seriously.
Well, I think there's a lot of precedents showing that the president doesn't always take the New York Times opinion pieces to heart. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having drone wars in Yemen anymore, a lot of other things. So I think it's just a, I think it's more of a contributing factor to public opinion than it is trying to change the president's opinion. But I think by changing public opinion does help change the president's opinion to some degree, because to a large degree, this is a political issue. You have more, I think you have a far greater emphasis on prosecution on the Republican side than you do on the Democratic side. And, you know, if he could see that the public is 51, 52, 55% in favor of granting amnesty, and the more editorials that come out that are pushing for that, the more public support there'll be for something like that, then there's more of a chance that Obama will do that. And I think the more this goes on, the more outlandish we're seeing the activities of the NSA. You know, this whole thing now, they're having an ability to get into everybody's iPhone and tap the not only go through the front door with an order from the FISA court to the internet companies like Google and so forth, but then to secretly tap into the back door, the cables that run between the fiber optic cables that run between the data centers that were unencrypted. So this whole idea of the NSA out of control, where they take this mission of intercepting every single piece of communications they can to the absurd level, when the whole idea here is to prevent terrorism, and by building this haystack halfway to the moon, they're defeating the original purpose of trying to find this needle in the haystack.
Well, James Bamford, it does appear that the fact that they tapped into the clouds and this cloud-based data services that Amazon are big into and that Microsoft and Google have, and that the NSA was tapping in to them, that apparently got their attention. It probably led to that full-page ad by the eight tech giants and the subsequent meeting in the White House. So it would seem to me that there's already a great deal of evidence that the blowback from the Snowden leaks and the revelations about how much the NSA is spying on Americans, and particularly the extent to which they've compromised American businesses, has clearly got the attention of the tech giants. I mean, they can't sell their product if people around the world, both here in the United States and in other countries, think that the NSA has a trapdoor, so they're not going to use their services. Is that what's going on here?
Well, I think that may be one of the more deciding factors is the economic aspects of all this. The that's something that the Republicans could start paying attention to. If all these tech companies start losing 20-30% of their business because who wants to buy, you know, a defective product? I mean, if you're buying a piece of secure communications equipment, you want it to be secure. You don't want it to have a backdoor to NSA. So, and to some degree, it's lost permanently, basically, because even if the White House or this panel comes out and they recommend that NSA not do this, who's really going to believe them? I mean, if you look at this agreement that the United States made with the Five I countries, the England, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, this agreement where United States is considered the first party and those countries are considered the second party, and the agreement was that first and second parties won't eavesdrop on each other. And then you find from the Snowden leaks this document that came out that was no foreign, in other words, it wasn't supposed to go to any other country, saying that despite the this agreement, this Five Eyes agreement, not to spy on each other, we won't spy on each other unless it happens to be in the United States' best interest. So, you know, if they do agree to come out and say we're not going to have any more backdoors, we're not going to have any more tapping of links between data centers, we're not going to weaken the encryption systems, commercial encryption systems anymore, who's going to believe them? I mean, how would you believe those claims?
So on the if things are moving ahead in terms of economic blowback and that the tech giants and others are starting to pressure the White House to rein in the NSA, what do you see on the political front? I mean, there was that close vote to eliminate the use of the metadata, the PRISM program, which the FISA court had authorized under an interpretation of the Patriot Act. That came in very close, didn't it? And that was
yeah, and that was what's so surprising. What gives encouragement to people who think that there may be some real changes made, and that was the fact that before Snowden, there would have been two votes in the Senate for limiting an NSA operation, and that would have been from Senators Wyden and Udall. After Snowden, after the revelations, there was between five and seven votes from a majority. It was almost a majority. And that was very early on, before a lot of these revelations came out. So you can see how the pendulum shifted. The pendulum swung enormously in the direction of the civil liberties people once some of these revelations came out. And I just see that the pendulum is going to keep swinging. I think you get to a point where the public starts becoming numb to all these disclosures, which is a danger, but I still think that these disclosures are increasing the swing of the pendulum to the left, or more to the civil liberty people who are involved and interested in civil liberties.
Right. Well, we got to be careful about the left because of Judge Leon, and we talked about how a lot of people
are on the run. The issue of privacy, which is an area I've been writing about for a long time.
Right.
It's an area that brings together the left and really true conservatives, the conservatives who really do mean that they don't want the government on their back,
right,
that they don't want the government under their bed and all that. And also the Tea Party is pretty much interested in this because they're largely libertarian. So you get a interesting bedfellows type of coalition together. But they're the groups of people that have always been interested in this issue. I mean, you get the Republicans, the mainstream Republicans, and they're largely all talk. It's all, let's get the government smaller, let's get the government off their back, and all they do is enlarge the government by building organizations like the Department of Homeland Security and then increasing government surveillance on everybody.
So, well, just in closing then, James Bamford, if the Deputy Director of the NSA, Rick Leggett's offer on CBS that he would consider amnesty for Snowden if he stopped any additional leaks, I've seen reports where this information that's been leaked so far is only 1% of the cash that he took with him. Do you think there's any realistic, pragmatic voice in the national security world, in the shadow world, that was basically going to come forth and basically tell Obama, listen, we should make this deal because, you know, we don't want all this other stuff to come out?
Well, I think there is a legitimate case that could be made for that, that the NSA could legitimately make that case to the White House, because if you look at all the documents that are out there now, there haven't been any documents released, although I'm sure they must have enormous cache of them. There haven't been any documents released on our spying on Russia, on our spying on China, on Iran, on North Korea, any of the areas that the United States considers potential adversaries and so forth. All the releases have dealt largely with the domestic activity and spying on friendly allies who we've been lying to. So there may be a lot of documents out there, but they're in the hands of, at least right now, responsible members of the journalist community who have decided that they aren't they're self-censoring their reporting on this.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, James Bamford.
Yeah, my pleasure, Ian. Good to be on your show.
Good to talk to you again. Again, I've been speaking with James Bamford, who's an investigative journalist specializing in national security issues. He was the Washington investigative reporter for ABC's World News Tonight, and is the author of the best-selling books Body of Secrets, The Puzzle Palace, A Pretext for War, 9/11 Iraq and the Abuse of America's Intelligence Agency, and The Shadow Factory, Inside the Ultra-Secret NSA, From 9/11 to Spying on America. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with the former U.S. ambassador to Turkey about the political earthquake in Turkey that threatens its prime minister and his party.